Christ is still the King.
Welcome to The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher on Iowa Catholic Radio. Every Wednesday, diving deep in the truth of the Catholic Church and restoring all things in Christ. The Uncommon Good, live from the Mercy Live Up Studio.
The Uncommon Good is on the air. I'm Bo Bonner.
I'm Dr. Bud Maher.
We are coming to you live from the Mercy Live Up Studio in beautiful Des Moines, Iowa. 1150 AM, 88.5 FM, 94.5 FM, streaming live, iowacatholicradio.com. And if you have the Iowa Catholic Radio app from Blessed Ministries and the People's Abstract Company, you can listen to us pretty much darn tootin' anywhere. Bud, how are you doing today?
I'm okay. What's the most creative place you've listened to Iowa Catholic Radio?
I've Kansas.
Okay.
Yeah, I haven't gone too far afield there. Yeah.
So whenever you cross from Kansas into Iowa and Nebraska, do you say, we're not in Kansas anymore?
Yeah.
Kids?
Yeah, I do, and they all groan. Actually, this time we, I drove through your great state for Memorial Day weekend, went down to Oklahoma, hung out with family, saw my wife's family in Kansas, and then we got to make the big old trek back up north, ate at Runza's. I don't know what they call them, but in Kansas they call those beer rocks. Those are good.
Well, we have some Nebraskans who have moved to other parts of the country, and what they'll do when they visit is they buy about 40 and then freeze them.
Yeah.
And eat Runza's all throughout the winter months.
So you guys probably didn't know you were going to get to hear about cabbage today, but that's what's happening. Runza's. Do you think Runza's could support our show? I don't know if they're...
I think if we say their name one more time, they're required to by law.
I'm sorry, I'm enjoying this a little bit too much.
Yeah, I forgot about the cabbage angle, though.
Yeah, cabbage. I mean, I could do an entire 40 minutes on cabbage. I know that Tony Calumet's in there and maybe listening, and I don't know how he's going to feel about us talking about cabbage for an entire show, but kimchi... I mean, I could really bring up cabbage with Polish sausage.
Yeah, I think a lot of Poles move to that area of the country. Let's see, My Antonia, the novel.
They're Czech.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, but cabbage. Folks, you're in for an exciting show. If we're leading this heavy on cabbage to begin with, you can only imagine what we're going to end up
talking
about.
Just go uphill from here, though.
We're brought to you always by Cartridge World.
So Cartridge World's, we're appreciative of their support. They're an industry leader delivering high-performance printing products that help you save time, money, and print great. Perfect for businesses, home offices, college students, or busy moms trying to find affordable printing supplies.
801 73rd Street in Windsor Heights, 515-564-7400, and online at cartridgeworld.com. Also, we're underwritten, as always, by Mercy College of Health Sciences. And I guess to be a bit more, you know, somber tone and serious, one of the things that I really want to talk up our colleges. We've had a student who faced a tragedy last week. She lost her 4-month-old baby girl, and the memorial service was yesterday. And in the sanctuary where everybody had gathered, the girl's favorite color was purple, and so they had everybody wear purple if you could. Well, I don't know if you know this, but Mercy College's scrubs are all purple. And we had row after row filled with purple scrubbed students showing their solidarity for their fellow student there. And, you know, it's one of those deals where colleges are many things for many people, instruction, a place to find out what they want to do in life. But there's also this idea of solidarity, and to see one of our fellow students in a great time of need to be supported by the Mercy College family. It made me very proud to be there, that in the midst of the difficulties of life, that we're more than just a college, we're more than just giving a service, but we're really a community that can be there for people. And so I was going to say, if you're out there listening, viewers, first of all, pray for this family. They really need your prayers right now, going through a difficult time, trying to go through school in the midst of all this. But also, if you feel moved to maybe help them out after the show, I'm going to put the caring page on the Uncommon Good Facebook page. If you go to Facebook and just put in the Uncommon Good, you can find it. And so if you feel so moved, you can support that family there. But I know this is maybe a weird way to talk about an underwriter, but I think that is one of the best ways that we can brag on Mercy College, is in the midst of difficult life situations, we really are a family that way.
Yeah, you know, sometimes being a smaller community can make things more difficult, just in the sense, like, there's other institutions, other schools that have more resources, let's just be frank. But there's something, like you said, about solidarity, Bo. And that ability, I can honestly say that I cross paths with most students at Mercy College over the course of a semester. And so it is a tight-knit community. And in that regard, I am grateful. And it's a high calling where you don't want to let anyone fall through the cracks, that in a sense we're all bound together and responsible for each other's good. And so I appreciate your reflection. I know it's probably meaningful to the student that you were able to make that yesterday.
Well, so like we said, we ask for prayers for Mercy College. Like I said, we're all sort of in this together, helping the student out. And so we'd appreciate your prayers. And like I said, if you go on the Uncommon Good Facebook page, we'll have something if you feel moved to donate. That actually really sort of rolls into what we're going to talk about today. You know, Bud, one of the first shows we had, we talked about subsidiarity. But, you know, one of the things with these terms in Catholic social teaching is that, you know, you can always be, there always can be too abstract, and you can always try to make them more and more concrete. They really do well to revisit them as much as possible. So I think by sort of happenstance and chance in philosophy, we were reading Plato's Republic for our students. And just some of the things that came up reminding me again that it is never too far afield to bring up how it is that local initiatives and this idea of what we really mean when we talk about a city and its interconnections is really the stuff of that word that we're all afraid to talk about, politics. And so I think we were going to revisit that today.
Yeah, as you said, reading through Plato's Republic, these ideas have been on my mind. What's great about the Catholic faith, and we've tried to highlight this on the show, is it gives us a kind of light, wouldn't you say, Bo, to traverse all of these topics. But as Catholics, we're bound in different ways to, like, our family members, obviously the local parish and our church community. At the end of our show each week, we pray that Christ would reign in our hearts, our families, our communities, and throughout the entire world. And the last part, community, unfortunately, in today's day and age, I think we're tempted sometimes to always think big picture. But as you're saying, we want to dive deeply into today. What is solidarity, or being concerned about the least of these, about each member of our community? How does that happen at a local level?
So stick around. We'll be back in a minute. Talk about these deep issues. The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher.
Thank you, CTI Ready Mix, for your support of Dowling Catholic Boys baseball broadcast. CTI Ready Mix has been serving Central Iowa since 2004 and has become a leader in Ready Mix concrete production. With 50 mixer trucks and locations in Johnston, Grimes, Elkhart, West Des Moines, and Carlisle, they are capable of supplying even the largest projects in Central and North Iowa. CTI Ready Mix, 1001 Southeast 37th Street, Grimes, 515-276-9567. Online at cti-ia.net.
Don't miss the second annual Summer at the Well Women's Gathering Saturday, June 24th at St. Thomas Aquinas Catholic Church in Indianola. From 10 a.m. to 8 p.m., you will experience a day full of faith, fellowship, and fun. Inspirational talks by local speakers, uplifting praise and worship music, adoration, and Saturday evening vigil mass. $65 registration, lunch and dinner included. Scholarships available. Register before June 9th at thewelldesmoines.com.
We're back with the Uncommon Good, Bo Bonner, Dr. Bud Maher, speaking today about the local way that the work of the polis, of the city, works out. Now, you know, one of the things that I have to confess is in the production of this show, many of you might think, wow, they must have been thinking about these topics months ahead of time. But this is not true. So I was texting Bud last night and telling him about, like, you know, what should we do this show about? And part of it is, like I said, when there's happy accidents of providence, that we're doing stuff in other aspects of our life, and it really comes to bear on what we talk about on the show, the common good, Catholic social teaching. So we're teaching Plato's Republic. I've taught this quite a few times. I always love getting to come back and really read, especially the first part of the chapter one, the part that everybody thinks is really boring. But the sort of most famous, I'd say, translation in English of the Republic is Alan Bloom's. So, you know, he wrote The Closing of the American Mind. But then he did a translation of the Republic, which is very beautiful and wonderful. And for once, and I say this as someone who's very doubtful of notes, there's very few people that I'd say buy a book and actually read the end notes. Anthony Esselin's end notes for Dante's in Divine Comedy, for instance, totally worth what you pay for them. Bloom does a really good job of giving notes about the Republic. So I know you're like, wow, Bo, we're talking about what your texting habits are and your reading habits are, but I'm getting to the point. Mm-hmm. So he starts to talk about, you know, this book of Plato's is sort of seen as the bedrock of political discussions from there on out, 3,000 years, basically, dealing with what Plato said in the Republic. But Bloom was pointing out that the words themselves, how they've come down to us, how we've translated them, have already begun to show how we think about things rather than learning lessons from what that book says. And so one of the first, Bud, that he points out is that the title, The Republic, is not really a good translation of the Greek. The Greek is like polioteia. I'm really bad at pronouncing Greek, so forgive me. And the idea, Bloom says it's something more like the regime. We, I think, worry about that sort of word. But he means the title is implicating, like, who are the people that get things done when it comes to life in the city. But he goes back to that the word has its root in polis. And I think we've all heard of this, where politics comes from. But polis means city. Now, we almost always think of city as some urban area. But the ancients always thought about this as the interconnected group of people, what the sort of last boundary of saying that there's a real way in which people will daily interact. There's countries, there's empires, but the city is that group of people which you regularly run into, not necessarily that you're best pals with, but that your life really does revolve around in some way. And so for them, there is a real way to talk about the composition of a city is to talk about how human beings live together. And of course, St. Augustine takes this up. His big work is the city of God, not the country of God, the nation, the empire of God, or even the family of God, the city of God. And so henceforth, all the way out. So it seems to me that we've talked, I was looking the other day, but we've had over 30 episodes. Hmm. And we've talked about a whole host of things. So I think it's always good to round back one more time and ask, what is the sort of, you know, brass tacks intricacies of what we're talking about.
Yeah.
So if we're going to talk about politics, we've harped on that we don't mean partisan politics, parties, and things like this. What we mean is polis, the city, the affairs of the city. And that's what I wanted to talk about today is like how things, the interaction between families, city government, but also local interactions and local ventures really make up what it's like to talk about the life of the city.
Well, Bo, you're more versed in Plato than I am, let's be honest, but I'm thinking back to that whole discussion of the polis, and Socrates, in the book, gets into some arguments with his friends about the nature of justice.
Right.
And he wants to say justice is the good that is owed each person. His friends have some doubts about this, so one of them says, like, well, isn't justice really, like, we can talk about it in flowery terms, but it's the strong imposing the will on the weaker. And so they're having this kind of debate about, like, what does it mean to have a just society? And Socrates at one point says something that really caught my eye and ties into, I think, Catholic social teaching. He says when we talk about justice, we only or always have to think about it in communal terms. Because there's things that a community provides that an individual can't provide for themselves. And I don't know about you, despite how out of shape I am and how poorly sometimes I spend my money, I can fall for this trap that, like, I've kind of created my life and I'm in control in the direction of my life. And this not only falsifies our understanding of providence, that God is ultimately directing our lives, but it also ignores the whole network of relationships that we're dependent upon on a daily basis, right?
I agree. This is The Uncommon Good with Bo Botter and Dr. Bud Maher. I think a great way that you brought this up is when we start thinking about what it means to be a member of a city that depends on other people, it's easy to ignore the very obvious marks that show that you're dependent on someone else. I always point out that the minute that you speak a language, you're not only dependent on everyone else around you, because it's a mutual effort. I always joke around that you can come in and be like, bee, boop, boop, gee, bar, burp, beep, and people are like, what is he doing? Oh, it's his own language. You're like, well, that's good, but that serves no one. Yeah. So automatically to talk, to write, or even to do sign language is to enter into a dependence on a multitude of people. But that's only the horizontal level. To speak is to depend on people who've come before you that you've never met.
Yeah.
One of the things we dork out and do in class a lot that I think students get annoyed at first, but then I like to think that in the end, they find it a charming and refreshing thing that their professors do, and they laugh as they're smoking pipes by a fire, thinking about it. We're always showing the etymology of words, which is a fancy way to say the history of words. Where do words come from? What are their, you know, predecessors, their ancestors? The reason that I think it's so interesting to think about the history of words is to think that they have a livelihood, too, that has preceded me and will keep existing after I'm dead. Now, you go, maybe, listener, why are we talking about linguistics if we're talking about politics? But I think that's one way that every day we should wake up and remind ourselves that we intimately, ultimately, and fundamentally depend on other people.
Yeah.
The variability to communicate means that we are not individuals like we sometimes think that we are.
Well, sacred scripture says that God uses the weak things of the world to shame the wise. And again, another curveball that we throw the students sometimes is we say, in a sense, we look at the world and human beings are at the top of the food chain.
Mm-hmm.
How did this go down? And the way that we approach this is, you know, like the NCAA tournament bracket. If you created a tournament like 64 versions of young mammals or animals, who do you think would win this contest? What I mean by that,
like a survival tournament.
Survival tournament, and it's a human infant up against, you know,
an infant bear.
Infant bear. Who wins that battle? And at what point could a human being survive out in the wild by themselves? We're born as very vulnerable creatures, but you pointed out to the students, Bo, that precisely that vulnerability is also our greatest strength.
My favorite answer that I always get is when I go, what's the youngest a human can be and survive on their own? And what I'm thinking is like 8 to 12, but we invariably get someone who goes like 28.
I think that number has to be pushed up these days.
That's right. But, you know, and it's a silly example that's supposed to like get their minds turning, like who would ever make a 64-team tournament against baby mammals? But then I'm all like, don't put it past humans. We've probably done it before. But the idea is, okay, we're at the top of the food chain, but those little babies, they can't do anything on their own. And there's other animals that, you know, you think about like a little puppy, they can get going pretty quick.
I was at the zoo in Omaha, and there's a baby giraffe. He was like 5 days old, and he was doing somersaults.
Right. I mean,
they're just running all over the place.
Yeah. And so you start to go, how is it that a creature so weak, so devoid of hair even? I mean, you know, we have to like spin.
Speak for yourself.
Yeah. Well, but I think against the elements, right, we're not going to match our hair up against, like, a sheep's wool, for instance.
Cabbage.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
But it's precisely because our children were so weak and we were forced to stay in community that we've gotten to where we are. And I think that goes back to what we're talking about when it comes to something like the city. I guess what I'm trying to point out is it's really easy to talk trash and get angry about our interactions with other humans. Like, let's be really honest about the human element of this. You know, what do other people do to you seemingly most days? They're in front of you in traffic. They're taking up time at Hy-Vee.
Trying to figure out the microchip on the credit card.
Right. They're being rude. They're asking you for things.
Yeah.
I mean, depending on what your job is, human beings are like the source of most of the frustration of your life. Depending on what your family and friends are like, human beings are the source of most frustrations of your life. We have a narrative that like we just need to go get away. I think we say, oh, if we could just be by ourselves. But we're inescapably drawn in community with each other. Even when it comes to something like the virtual life that people try to live on internet.
Yeah.
Those are all completely dependent on people. I think one of the things that we would say about the virtual life is it's more like the ghosts of people, because like that website doesn't have a person present there, but that's the markings of someone else. We inescapably have to deal with each other. And so when we talk about life in the city, it's easy to think of distractions. When we think of the life of politics, it's easy to think of people barking campaign slogans at us, or, you know, people making backroom deals, people passing laws we don't like. But Socrates, the Catholic social tradition, is begging us to think of a much more intricate, intimate, and foundational way to think about all of these things.
Yeah, and all of this conversation is really at the heart of Catholic moral theology. I think you can judge the strength of a society on the basis of how it treats the least among its community. And the church has always upheld saints who, you think about recent saints like Saint Mother Teresa. In the common parlance, we throw out the phrase like the power of love. I think there's a Celine Dion song about that. And it sounds really...
I hope so, if not.
The power. It sounds really empty and vacuous. But, you know, you think about someone like Saint Mother Teresa, and why was the world drawn to her? Like, why was she on the cover of Time magazine? And it was precisely because she was there providing a gift, I would say, that could not be provided in any other way except to be with helpless individuals at the moment of their deaths. And, you know, the world might say that's a failure because a life wasn't saved. Well, a memo of sorts. We all are mortal. We'll all pass away. But the church, part of the heroes of our faith are those who are there literally on the front lines. I mean, that's another cool thing about Mercy College. We're training folks to provide compassionate medical care, and just really how that's one way that we extend the grace of God into people's lives. And this brings us to another, like, this is fancy word day, I guess, on the show.
But in fancy word day! Cabbage.
Besides cabbage, in class we talk about oikophilia. And when we first say that phrase, students are like, huh? But we break it down, we say oikophilia, this comes from a philosopher, Roger Scruton, who says, to truly seek justice, we have to have a love of place. And, Bo, you've pointed out that when we talk about a social issue like homelessness, it's easy to turn the homeless, even how we use that phrase, into a kind of abstraction. It's something out there, and it doesn't have flesh and bones. And if we always just talk about the homeless or homelessness, in a sense, we never move forward to truly love other people. Saying that there is this particular homeless person, you know, say, Jerry, whoever his happy names to be, and he's a member of our community, that completely shifts the conversation. All of a sudden, Jerry is not a member of the homeless community. Jerry is ours. He's a part of our town.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, we do this with sort of how we arrange architecture, cityscapes. Again, these things fall into easy abstractions, but when you talk about the practicalities of the matter, why does it matter where you place a road, for instance? This goes to something you've talked about with, not to bag on Omaha, because plenty of cities do this, but when it comes to when people decide to make a highway, for instance, no one ever asks small things like, well, what is that driving over or away from? Mm-hmm. So I think we've made modern cityscapes where we don't have to see things that call to question our concrete lives together. We try to make it as abstract as possible. If you get on a highway and you can go from point A to point B in 10 minutes and see very little of the city, I'm not bashing this. I'm not trying to say we should like burn down 235 tomorrow, although some days when I'm driving,
you feel that way.
Yeah. but I'm not saying that like it's bad. And I mean, of course, there's great things that come from that. If you're sick in West Des Moines, they can take you to Mercy on 235.
Yeah.
Obviously, technology's good. But there's a cost. And so we don't see each other. And when we do, it's even sort of almost highly abstracted, even when it's face-to-face. So when you see someone like a panhandler on the exit from 235 asking for food with a sign or whatever, well, that almost goes into like a trope or a stereotype where you can, in your mind, think like, oh, that guy's just going to do blank, or, well, what were they doing? And, you know, no fault if them or you, there's no way for you to stop at a stoplight and get to know why is that person in the need that they're in. But we order a lot of life that way.
Yeah.
We order a lot of life that way so that we don't bump into each other. And I mean, half the time at Mercy College, why we have people go out and do servants learning projects, I mean, none of us are dumb enough to think those kids are going to solve huge issues in 15 hours. But maybe they can put a face to what I mean, we really point this out too. These are your neighbors. This is not helping someone far away. These are neighbors in need of help. I think any way that we can go to make politics seem more concrete in that regard, the life of the city, is what we have to be about. I even think about it in terms of, you know, we'll talk about politics and like sides fighting, but I just want people to realize that politics is the fact you have a road to drive on. Mm-hmm. I want you to realize every time you flush the toilet, folks, that is a big political issue. You do realize, like, the huge fight everybody's having about water, for instance, right? We don't have to go into this and fight the merits of this, about entire parts of Iowa fighting with other parts of Iowa. But I'm telling you, you flush that toilet every day and you turn on that sink and you don't think a minute of it, that's a political act. Because you pay taxes for that. And let me tell you, that's not a bad tax to pay. I think sometimes when we start talking about taxes, again, it's an abstraction. But, guys, running water is awesome.
Yeah.
And Lord knows that if I can't shower every day, far fewer people would like me. And when you start talking about things like, what are we going to do with, you know, we're going to have to replace every single pipe that's underground that carries water. And that's something that no one wants to pay taxes for. It's hard for me to say, like, I'm going to set aside $10 a month for a future pipe. But we have to start thinking about that as, like, well, what legacy do I leave to my kids? And we can think about big flowery things, but I want to leave a pipe to my kids that gets some water so they can flush and drink and shower.
You're listening to The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher. Bo, I think that's great. There's really a brass tacks nature to this whole conversation. And, you know, I've heard atheist critics accuse Christianity of being pie in the sky. If you actually read the teachings of Jesus or delve deeply into the into Catholic social teaching, it's very much caught up in the nitty-gritty of everyday life. And I loved, so a few minutes ago you're talking about cityscapes and the way that we even build our roads or design our buildings. This is really true, right? Like you go, I'm taking this from James K. Smith, but you go into a modern shopping mall, and it is a kind of church, the way that light is refracted through the building. And I know I've been in some shopping malls where for a few moments in time, my mind is deceived and I think, oh, there really is no suffering in the world. It's all Cinnabon and marble floors and glowing lights. As Catholics, we've always thought about the world differently. And I love that about churches. The center of a church is the crucifix, and below that is the altar. Nearby is the real presence of our Lord. And so when we gather as a community each Sunday, and hopefully several times throughout the week, we're reminded that we're dependent on God, but also that our community starts, or I want to say it's built around the body and blood of our Lord Jesus Christ. And the community that he modeled for his disciples was one of servanthood, but is also one of reconciliation. So we can joke about things about being ticked off about someone cutting us off in traffic or whatever, but as Catholics, as Christians, we're daily reminded that we don't have to live in this kind of dog-eat-dog style in the way that sometimes the world thinks about our common life together. Our common life is built around a crucified Lord, and he modeled a path for us of reconciliation. And that's the kind of grace and the power that enables the ministry of someone like St. Mother Teresa. And if you ever want to be moved, I mean, read about her devotion to the Eucharist. She never divorced service to the poor from a real strong devotion to the body and blood of our Lord Jesus Christ. So I'm sorry to go on a little bit of a soapbox there, but I think what you're saying about how we organize our common life, like let's not play down the importance of how we design our buildings and how we shape our roads. And as Catholics, being inspired insofar as we can to jump into those conversations, arguments about water are great. Like I'm preaching to myself here, but don't be afraid of a good argument because these debates need to be had.
You know, one of the craziest, you know, you look back at your life and you're like, wow, that really made a mark on me. You know, I grew up Southern Baptist, low church, and, you know, not, I still think my, the little church I grew up in, Waukeeta, Oklahoma, First Baptist, really did sort of show some of this architecture you're talking about, but we were very unreflective on it. I didn't think about it much. I remember that Michael Bartley, who played a very big role in my life, who was the campus minister at the Wesley Foundation when I was Methodist Oklahoma State, he was trying to talk to me about like how liturgy and architecture matter. And so where he brought me to make this point was a casino. Because he points out, he's like, look at how they make this. They dim it down. The ceiling is really high. They make it look like there's stars. They want you to like think of it as like an open air temple, and that like you lose track of time, and like what you are doing there with the one armed bandits is like the good and proper place in the world. He's like, you see how what they're doing is plagiarizing church architecture to make you think what you're doing is like the center of the world.
Yeah.
And I remember like being like very like mind blown that oh, people mean to do things when they design buildings, and that this is true for buildings. This is true. This is why it's also important for churches to care about beauty. But we do this with cities. We do this with all these things. And so what I guess I'm saying is there's a way in which you can get caught up in politics, and it's ruinous for your soul, your prayer life, and all these things. And I know that we've, I think, rightly tried to point people out that there's more to the common good than just modern politics, i.e. party politics. But I also want to say the opposite thing, that maybe it seems like I'm being contradictory, but I want to say it's actually a different depth. It's also the fact, folks, that when we do things like collect trash on a regular basis, that this is the life of the city and the sort of agape type of love that the Bible talks about made manifest, if only we would think of it that way. What we do instead is just think like, oh, of course, like I'm owed trash service. You realize, for thousands of years, that didn't exist.
Yeah.
And I guess what I'm saying is, like, the sort of miracle of political life in this ancient way is you really could go out when you put out your trash and see it for the near miracle that it is. If we can think of it that way, that this these sort of services, having roads, providing electricity, providing trash service, that really, and especially when it helps the poor and the weak, that this is actually something like love. And the only love that a city can provide.
Yeah, one thing that I've been trying to challenge myself with is, how can I live in such a way that there's no divorce between my faith and day-to-day existence? And, of course, Bo, like we started today talking about the local, and it was kind of fun to see where the conversation headed. But, you know, even little things like where we shop. With our students at Mercy, I always love hearing student stories about, like, my parents own an ice cream stand or something like that. And again, an ice cream stand, it seems like a small thing, but that kind of locality and getting to know, you know, here in Iowa, we have the opportunity sometimes to buy food from local farmers.
Yeah.
Here at the station, we tried to emphasize local programming, but that's all creating a thicker local community where we know each other. We know the people who we buy our beef from.
Yeah. Well, we need to take a break. We ran long because it was an awesome conversation. So we'll be back in a minute with the Uncommon Good, Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher.
Thank you, Construction Professionals, for your support of Dowling Catholic Sports 365. Construction Professionals is a family-owned business dedicated to our customers. Whether designing, building, or renovating, we are here to better serve you. CPCustomHomes.com.
Don't miss the second annual Summer at the Well Women's Gathering Saturday, June 24th at St. Thomas Aquinas Catholic Church in Indianola. From 10 a.m. to 8 p.m., you will experience a day full of faith, fellowship, and fun. Inspirational talks by local speakers, uplifting praise and worship music, adoration, and Saturday evening vigil mass. $65 registration, lunch and dinner included. Scholarships available. Register before June 9th at thewelldesmoines.com.
Be sure to tune into my show, John Leonetti in the Morning, to start your day. Thanks to Plaza Dental Group, Catholic-owned and good friends to Iowa Catholic Radio. Comfortable Dentistry, 515-344-3523, online at dmsmiles.com.
We're back with the Uncommon Good. You know, Bud, to run out, round out the show today, since we talked about local initiatives, I just thought, you know, instead of doing Unbrilliant question or something like that, we can talk about some of the local initiatives that we're involved with. Obviously, Mercy College comes to mind, your local Catholic college.
The Catholic College of Des Moines, I would say.
That's right. That's we should make that as we should put that in Latin underneath it.
Another thing that's been on my mind, and we've been having conversations with our good friend Brian Gonzalez and the folks at Inner Visions. They do work supporting women who have unexpected pregnancies, or maybe what we'd call like a crisis pregnancy. And I think really the work that they do is an act of solidarity, where it's not a handout, but it's an opportunity to walk alongside someone in a difficult situation and to really promote the opportunity for them to affirm life. I know they're having their gala this Thursday evening. So, I mean, there's great worldwide Catholic organizations. I think there's something to be said about keeping your money here at organizations here in town.
You were bringing up the ice cream place. It's Dairy Zone, okay. And I just have to tell you, it's fantastic. It's in the eastern. It's on. It's eastern part of the city. Go to Dairy Zone. I think about like Divine Treasures. Look, I'm not acting like you should never use Amazon again. I mean, I use Amazon. I can't like lie about that. But Divine Treasures is your local Catholic bookstore. That's a place where. Oh right, we have the Divine Treasures All Stars. You can get things there, and sometimes it's stuff that you can get elsewhere. But literally just having a face and a relationship with people really makes a difference. And I think sometimes people forget that.
I think in the spiritual life, Bo, you mentioned like turning on our faucet and not really thinking about that and all the kind of work that went into that. You know, certainly not taking for granted your local parish.
Right.
And the role that a parish serves in a community. I know in St. Louis, we went to a church called St. Francis de Sales. And I think just the presence of that revitalized Catholic community had an impact in the neighborhood, even though not necessarily a lot of the neighbors went to Mass there, that just the presence of the priest being there and kind of like an ongoing life of art and worship really helped to help the community as a whole.
And I'm in a place like Des Moines where we have the opportunity to have intermediate institutions, arms of the church's service, like the St. Vincent de Paul Society, you think of St. Joseph's and St. Mary's. There's all these different ways, the Catholic Charities, that these are local arms that locally help people, that when you talk about have I helped my neighbor and who is my neighbor, that you have all these opportunities to be able to reach out and say, these people are my neighbor.
Well, I think that's going to kind of wrap up the conversation for today. Thanks for listening. I did want to plug real quickly that the Rosary will come on right after this. If you've been keeping up with Bible in a Year, that takes place, I always...
5:30.
5:30.
Yeah. Well, I'd say that the final thing to say, if we're talking about locality, is, you know, we're a local show on a local radio station. It's something easy to take for granted as well. So if you're so moved, we had a wonderful carathon, but we still need those donations throughout the year to keep running. So a personal plug to maybe think about donating to Iowa Catholic Radio, because like we said, certainly not everywhere has a radio station like this. And just to brag, ours is pretty awesome.
Well, what did Mother Angelica used to always say, like, keep us between your electric bill and your cable bill?
Right.
Or cancel your cable bill and give twice as much.
I like that idea as well. This has been The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher. We loved having our time with you today. May the Prince of Peace, Jesus Christ, reign in our hearts, in our families, in our cities, in our state, in our country, in the entire world. This has been The Uncommon Good. God bless. See you next week.
Thanks,
folks.
Guys.
The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher is heard Wednesdays at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. on Iowa Catholic Radio and on the official Iowa Catholic Radio app.